Hello and welcome to the podcast edition of Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, your source for news, reviews, previews, and interviews with authors and artists about baseball books, music, film, pretty much anything you can fit on a bookshelf. And that's the slogan, if it fits on a bookshelf, it fits here. Another book about Pete Rose? Seems more books have been published about and by the dishonored all-time hit leader than anyone except Babe Ruth, Mickey Mantle, Joe DiMaggio, and Jackie Robinson. But as Kostya Kennedy explained in our conversation recently, the job of the writer is to find something new to say, or say it differently, and presumably better, than previous attempts. He did that in his 2011 book, 56, Joe DiMaggio and the Last Magic Number in Sports, which earned Spitball Magazine's Casey Award for that year. And with all the early buzz his new book, Pete Rose and America's Dilemma, is getting already, I'm sure there are more accolades in his future.
Kostya Kennedy, welcome back to the Baseball Bookshelf.
Good to be with you, Ron.
So at first I thought another book about Pete Rose, but then I realized it's 25 years since his banishment.
25 years and just as long since a book, I mean, just shortly thereafter a book came out, but also the story has really changed both in the world around him and in close with Pete himself.
Now, when you say a world around him, are you by any chance referring to the performance-enhancing drug situation?
Well, yeah, certainly that. I mean, I think the landscape of baseball has changed for better and for worse. Like, obviously, there's been the steroid era, and we're seeing guys on the Hall of Fame ballot. Nobody's gotten in yet who, you know, kind of a known or heavily suspected steroid user. But, you know, other things have changed, too. We now, in New York, for example, and you could pick a ballpark pretty much anywhere, but Citi Field has opened with Harrah's as a signature sponsor, you know, and has the Caesars Club casino, not casino, I'm sorry, Caesars Club restaurant is there. Obviously, you can't bet at the stadium. But Harrah's, of course, has run the huge baseball book in Las Vegas. I mean, the lines have become blurred. And Cincinnati had the Horseshoe Casino advertisements there. There's the Mohegan Sun Sports Bar and the Yankees, you name it. Now, this isn't the same as betting on baseball, which is what Pete did, but it is showing a greater sort of leniency that I know for a fact makes some people in the game uncomfortable towards gambling. Those are just two of the things. I mean, I think that the world has changed in so many different ways in terms of how we view athletes and baseball players in the time since Pete was banned.
So, getting back to the amount of books that have been written about Rose, why did you decide to do this one?
I mean, if you look at the books on Rose, there's a lot of different things, and the books often are either, you know, the whole series of, like, Pete Rose baseball hero type of books, and there's also been books that are kind of takedown of Pete, you know, that the fraudulent Pete and all that, and I was looking to do something that was a little more balanced. And also, I mean, I don't think that for any writer, the idea that, oh, somebody wrote a book about something would stop you from doing it. I mean, we're all writers. We're doing what we do. We have our perspective. We're going to take our own path with a narrative of a truly, truly remarkable American individual. So the fact that there were other books really didn't play any part whatsoever in my thinking. I mean, I was, of course, aware of them and read most of them and read through all of them that I could find so as to know what's out there. But it's not really I don't think any writer should think like, oh, well, I mean, unless a book happened to come out last year or something, but you know, we're all trying to do what we can do in our own way and tell our own stories, so that wasn't much of an issue.
Now, you use the word balance. Do you think this is a balanced story? Because there are some parts of it where it seems that you're coming down kind of on his side.
Yeah, I've had people say, oh, you're coming down on Pete's side, and then the next chapter they say, oh, you're coming down really hard against him.
I guess it's a matter of interpretation by the reader.
Yeah, I mean, I've had people say, hey, I've changed my mind five or six times reading this book on how I felt about Pete. When you say coming down on his side, I'm not sure what you mean. If you think that there are times when I say that he played the game the way we all wish human beings would play baseball as baseball fans, that's absolutely true. If you know, if the question is his behavior during the investigation, I couldn't come down further than not on his side. So it just depends on what we're looking at. I don't have a position on the overall view and measurement one should have of Pete Rose, but certainly along the way, there are certain things in which I think that his position was absolutely right and certain things in which I think his position was absolutely wrong. The fact that there had been only one player in the history of baseball who had been explicitly denied a chance to appear on the ballot makes me very uncomfortable, and I think it should make everybody uncomfortable. If you look at, Chula Joe Jackson could have been voted in any time, you know, and he did get votes, and the door was wide open for him to get in, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't until Pete was eligible that they decided to get this thing together.
So, forgive me if I'm misremembering the situation, but it's not a chicken and egg thing. He's not eligible, so therefore he can't be put on the ballot.
Well, he was made permanently ineligible in 1989 when he signed the agreement. He was obviously guilty of sin, and there was no question about it. But at that time, there was no rule that prohibited somebody who was on baseball's ineligible list for going into the being elected on the Hall of Fame, being put on the ballot, which, as I say, is why Joe Jackson had been eligible. And they were, all of a sudden, they were scared. Oh, my God, Pete's going to be eligible next year for the Hall of Fame. Now, listen, Ron, it wasn't clear that Pete would get in. There were lots of writers who were saying, there's no way I'm going to vote for Pete after what he did. But there were some who said yes. And up in Cooperstown, they weren't happy about that. So Cooperstown was designed in the beginning to let the writers make this decision. The idea was to represent the general feeling of the fan and to have this democratic process, right? So there's over 400 then and now over 500 voters who are entrusted with this. And the Hall of Fame board decided, you know what? We don't trust these guys to make the decision we want. We're going to pass this rule. When you pass that rule that says anyone on baseball's permanently ineligible list can't be eligible for the Hall of Fame, it sounds like it's a pretty wide rule, right? I mean, it covers a lot of ground. But the entire list of people who've been barred under it comes down to one name, Pete Rose. So it was clearly intended. And, it does make me uncomfortable that sort of democratic process would be rejiggered specifically to keep somebody out. And this, I want to be clear, this is not to say that had I had a vote then, I would have voted for Pete. I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying I wouldn't have. I'm saying that it should have been, just as Jack Lang was infuriated, who at the time and other writers were, that to have the board just by fiat say, hey, nope, we're not going to trust you to do it.
And do you think there'll ever come a time when he might be reinstated? It seems, as you're reading through the different generations of commissioners, each one kind of doesn't want to undo what Bart Giamatti did. You know, they all seem like leave it to the next guy. With Bud Selig ready to step down, do you think whoever might replace him would consider reinstating Rose?
Well, again, just to be clear, there's two things. There's the reinstatement into the game itself, and then there's the would be a rechanging or re-examination of the rule to keep him out of the Hall of Fame. You know, Pete is still a gambler. I don't know for sure that he's betting on baseball. He says he's not, and I don't know whether that's true, but he'll still play the horses, and he'll still, wager on sporting events, and a lot of that is legal. He spends his time in Las Vegas, but if you're Pete Rose, that's not a very good idea. Mm-hmm. And if a baseball commissioner comes in, he's going to look at what Pete's doing and have to think really hard about, do I want to put a guy in, particularly as long as, you know, he'll be 73 next month. He's not about to get a manager's job, even if he was reinstated, but he's still at an age where somebody could have him be a coach or something like that, and I think that would, and rightfully, make a commissioner pretty apprehensive about putting him in, given his background, the fact that he's still gambling.
Now, you work with Rose on this book to a degree, correct?
No, not at all.
No
cooperation, not in the least.
So, when you report on his appearances in Cooperstown?
Yep. I went to where he was, and I followed him as closely as I could. I got physically as close as I could to him. He would talk with me when I was in a group, and he would talk directly with me when I asked him questions. But there was never a time that I had an appointment and went and saw him and spoke with him. There was no partnership or anything like that at
Did
all.
Did he know you were doing this book?
Yes, he knew I was doing a book, and I spoke to him beforehand and asked him for time, and he didn't want to give it without some kind of an agreement or partnership. I did spend time with him for my previous book, 56. Rose, of course, had that hitting streak in 78, and he knew DiMaggio well. And there I had to sit down with him, mainly talking about the 78 season, pretty specific line of questioning for that. This time, Pete was very well aware. I went to him directly. I'm doing this book. You want to spend some time together, all that. I never wanted to have any kind of a partnership or a cooperation, but I did want to have, I wanted to let him know and let him know what I was doing. But instead, I just kind of, one thing to Pete's credit, he didn't shut down the people around him, to my knowledge. Most people would speak to me. A couple didn't, but I have no reason to think it was because Pete told them to. So I was spent a lot of time with his brother David, with his son Pete Jr., with some of his close friends or associates, I should say, in Cincinnati, people in Cooperstown, various places. So I was able to get pretty close to the source without having, again, any kind of relationship or having him work with me. I don't know if he's in favor of the book. My feeling is that, there's a lot in there that he would not like to be in there. So we'll see what his response publicly is.
Now, you mentioned your book on DiMaggio. And for lack of a better word, relationship with Rose. These are two very iconic figures in baseball's history. What are the similarities between them?
I think the biggest similarity, first of all, one of their relationships was they spent 3 weeks together in Vietnam on a Goodwill tour, so they did have some kind of beyond the usual relationship. The similarity, I think, is in the way they played the game. And the famous quote of DiMaggio that, he's late in his career and he's got the heel spurs and it's 8-0, the Yankees are losing or whatever it is, and he is just busting it down first base after hitting a pop-up, and somebody said to him, Joe, why are you running like that? Take it easy. And he says, well, maybe somebody in the stands has never seen me play. In other words, Joe DiMaggio is going to hustle every play all the time. And that's something that Pete was aware of, that particular quote, and aware of the way Joe DiMaggio played. And although their playing style couldn't have been more different, one very graceful in DiMaggio and one sort of all arms and legs and like a bull being let out of a pen in Rose, but in the commitment to sort of playing the game right and playing with an unusual intensity that teammates fed off, there was a great similarity.
When you're working on a book like this, it obviously takes a lot of research, speaking to a lot of people. What surprised you the most?
I think what surprised me the most is, for the stuff that has been looked at Rose, I think that a lot of times he sort of painted as a caricature. He has when he was a player, he had, right down to the comic book nickname, Charlie Hustle, and he had this sort of cartoonish persona. And then same with, he bets on the game, and he's just the butt of every joke you could possibly imagine, right, for years and years, and the way he's so defiant and all that. And even now in his sort of this long, strange twilight of his life where he's involved in pro wrestling and he'll sign anything to make a buck and he's hawking his story and, he's a figure of easy, it's easy to be glib about Pete. We feel like, oh, we know him and we're going to just make a joke and categorize him. But, there's a human being in there who's full of contradictions. And as Pete says, I get up every day and I do Pete Rose, meaning that there's somebody else besides that Pete Rose that we see. And I think getting in there a little bit, partly through his brother, partly through his son, and partly through observing him on many occasions in sort of unfiltered moments, was seeing that, there's a guy there that he's full of contradictions, he's a complicated personality, and I think that sort of three- or four-dimensional look at him was probably the most surprising or gratifying thing about it.
In the title of your book, you use the word dilemma. What is the dilemma here?
The dilemma is, what do we make of Pete? How do we as a society or each individual feel about Pete Rose? And it's still a question. I'm sure you've experienced it. You can get people going on a Pete Rose topic anytime, And I think the dilemma is knowing how to sort that out for ourselves. There's obviously no baseball fan would not have some good things to say about Pete Rose and some good feeling about Pete Rose if you're honest with a love for the game. And similarly, no person couldn't recoil in some ways from Pete Rose and what he is and all of that. I mean, that's certainly both of those things are true for me. And I just feel that, you know, in sports there's all these questions we have from, you know, who's the greatest quarterback or should we get rid of the DH and all that. But this is a sort of conundrum that has moral issues attached to it. It's layered. To me, it's why it provided fodder for a book, because it has these different dimensions. And so that's the dilemma. The dilemma is how do we sort out Pete Rose? How do we measure him?
And we've been talking with Kostya Kennedy, author of the new Pete Rose biography, Pete Rose, An American Dilemma. Kostya, thank you very much.
Ron, always good to be on with you.
Kostya Kennedy will be appearing at several events in the coming days and weeks, among them Gelf Magazine's Varsity Letters program on Thursday, April 10th, where he'll share the stage with Jonah Carey, author of a new history about the Montreal Expos. And I'll be talking with Jonah, I'm sure, in the not-too-distant future. Visit Gelf Magazine, that's GELFMAGAZINE.com, for further details. And remember to visit Ron Kaplan's BaseballBookshelf.com regularly. Remember, we have a new bookshelf book giveaway every week. Just leave your comment if you're the fifth person to comment on any topic, not just the book that's up for giveaway. You have a chance to win. So thanks again, everybody, and talk to you soon.